Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Michael Parker is the kind of teacher and school principal that gets a real kick out of sharing practical learning ideas with kids. It's Michael's contention that as parents and teachers, we should be brave and engage with our kids in ways to build up their capacity to deal with tough questions in life. His two books, Talk With Your Kids Ethics and Talk With Your Kids Big Ideas, are chock full of hundreds of topics to challenge our kids and kickstart some pretty fascinating insights. When we welcomed Michael to Open House, we started with his goal in writing these two books.
Okay, the journey itself probably started about 20, 25 years ago when I got involved in the philosophy in schools movement and association, and it was at the beginning of my teaching career, and it was like taking this exciting, these fireworks into the classroom, all of these big expanding ideas, which was so much more interesting than a lot of the content they were learning. so things like, is what you see as red the same as what other people see as red? Where does your brain stop and your mind begin, and if anywhere? You know, all those questions that sort of cleave like in the center of your mind. So I've always been interested in how to get that sort of thinking going. So that's they're the big ideas, even though the book itself is only a couple of months old. The ethics book came out of it was after the global financial crisis, actually, and I was working at a place that had many children who were going to become captains of industry and do all sorts of things,
yeah.
And yeah, it seemed to become increasingly apparent that everybody needed to think and to explore ethics in a really overt way in classes and also at homes. It's of course good to have the example of your parents and their statements, but it's also good to discuss with them.
When I was reflecting on my childhood, I don't remember ever there being an overt discussion about situation ethics. It occurred to me then a pastor that we had for a time in one of the small churches I attended who was big into this stuff. So his children's story, instead of telling a Bible story, he had a situation ethics quandary for us to consider. And I remember being so animated, but I cannot for the life of me remember what age I was. So in your experience as a principal and a teacher, when is the right time to open the gate on issues of ethics and big ideas?
The book itself is aimed at kids about 10, 11, and I think that's when the capacity and the curiosity are at their peak almost. But I also think that younger kids can get pieces of it as well. So, for example, there are children's picture books for 4- and 5-year-olds that pose some of these sorts of questions. And it's great to read those and have the kids have that curiosity and be asking. So you can ask at any time and get amazing answers. But I think the capacity as well as the curiosity really, really starts kicking in at 9 and 10.
And when you pose a question like, do you let somebody who's passing on the inside of you at an intersection in,
yes,
when you've been waiting for a long time at the lights? You know, while the kids don't have a license to drive, they've all been in the car when it happens. Tell me about why it is we have this inbuilt sense of inquiry about these issues, which when you expand them out are actually quite complex.
I mean, I do think that we're all more than the sum of our parts, as it were, and I think that we yearn for the ideas, for that sense that there is more out there, that there's so much to make sense of, and that's why when you alight on one or two of, you know, of the questions, that's what creates the excitement. And to see it as part of a bigger theme, so that, say, someone pushing in at the lights is not just a single incident of someone pushing you into the lights,
yeah,
but actually links back like a stream into hundreds of years of ethical philosophy.
Yes, tell me about it. That conversation's continued now for days at my place. So let's...
I don't know about the traffic, but you then go on and make your own ethical rules for each different intersection.
Yes, yes. That's actually funny you should say that. This only happened just yesterday at my place. Dad, you know how we decided we would. I don't think we'd do it at this intersection because it takes too long. What about the proposition that somehow we're taking a sense of innocence or wonderful naivete away from our kids when you start to open the world up to the fact that sometimes there are no black and white answers, that you lose something?
I think that when kids explore these things and feel good about their answers, that actually increases the sense of wonder and excitement and optimism about the world, that naivety there's not an adult that's going to come in and either shut it down or say, no, it's like this, not this. So I think that sort of exploration and curiosity helps with the wonder.
It occurs to me into our conversation that when I use the term ethics, there are going to be some mums and dads who are feeling threatened by this because of the conversation that's evolved around the replacement in, say, our state school system of RE with ethics classes instead.
Yep.
How are you not contributing to that bonfire?
Yeah, it is a bureaucratic, I don't want to call it a mistake, but a bureaucratic unfortunate. It's bureaucratically unfortunate that ethics was put up against RE,
yeah,
as if one is in opposition with each other. I mean, in fact, they're much more closely aligned than any other subject. I mean, you could have just as easily put bike riding or geography or something up against RE. And indeed, the people that were doing those ethics courses, I know that they very much asked for it not to go up against RE because they didn't want that sense that there was a dichotomy, because it's a false dichotomy.
Yeah.
So it's just unfortunate in New South Wales that it looks like that. You can do RE or you can do ethics. I mean, the ethics, I think, should be taught elsewhere in the syllabus, so you never have to be having that conversation about RE or ethics. The other advantage of having having ethics taught during the rest of the day is it'll be taught by the teacher. I mean, the teacher is a specialised professional in how to do it, and it would be great to think that they were the people who were teaching the ethics.
I loved taking some of the questions through to my family just as a road test before our conversation. And as I was finishing up one particular conversation,
yeah,
I wondered to myself how, as parents, we deal with one of two outcomes. The first is when they look to us for an answer and we don't have one.
Yeah.
Or secondary, if the kids are left with an impression that we have a more relativist approach to learning. And that worried me as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a very good point. I say in the book that the old mode of ethics teaching was very much that authoritarian, you know, do what I say and let's not discuss it mode. In moving from that to a more liberal examined style, that doesn't mean you keep sliding down the slippery dip and end up in permissive, completely relativistic, any answer is as good as any other. I do think that certain values are better than other values. I think kindness is better than cruelty, for example. And I think that when you ask the questions and you have straining through it, well, what is the kind response? What's the generous response? What sort of people do we want to be? And how does that help you answer your questions? I do think that you find that if you do have a core set of values as you approach it, you find that it's not just anything goes. I also say when you're talking about something hypothetically, it's good to explore. So, for example, could somebody much less rich than the makers of Walmart in America, who, you know, say are the richest people in America, is it okay to go to Walmart and take something because they're so very, very wealthy and they're not going to notice? yeah, it's one thing to discuss that hypothetically for Walmart, but of course, if your child actually went into Kmart and stole something, you'd be having some very directive conversations about the wrongness of it.
Yeah.
Because you take it out of that sort of hypothetical agar plate and you put it into the, you know, if stuff's happening in the real world, you want to, yeah, you, I think there is scope to be more directive at times.
If we move on to the Big Ideas book, the process that you're inducting both the parent or teacher and the children to engage in is quite different from the straight up, what would you do if?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, the Big Ideas was where I started in my own sort of education with kids. And yes, it is interesting because you can't always just rely on yourself.
Yeah.
There's more of a sense of what have other people said, and yeah, I need a bit of help here, and that's why I've got in that section. I've got background briefing and a thing called PS a bit more, which gives you sort of some tidbits and areas from philosophy to help, and of course hopefully they're very user-friendly and very easy to get your head around.
So in essence, when you're starting the conversation, you brief the kids, this is what you need to know.
Yeah.
And then you start to engage with a series of leading questions.
Yeah, that's right. So you just give them, and it's only a paragraph and it's pretty easy to read, but it does mean, you know, you do say there's a bit more there. I mean, there are many questions. I like the ones I posed before about if what you see is red, do other people see as red, which you can just start up on your own. And then after you've wandered around a little bit on your own, then you can have a look at what great thinkers have said about it, so you can stand on the shoulders of giants a bit. But it's fun to start off yourself.
Let me ask this then, as a teacher or a parent having these conversations, with these kinds of ideas, should we have a place that we want to land on before we start?
I don't think so. I think you'd find if you push yourself that you've probably got a preconception of what's important. So you find you'd often have your own landing point, but you want to see where the discussion takes you, and particularly in something that perhaps is not quite so ethical, though a lot of them do end up a little bit ethical. I think the journey is important as well, and if the kids are pretty good at sensing that you're herding them in a direction,
right,
and they may jack up in the middle of the conversation.
Okay.
I've always said if you were going to have a conversation with somebody else, and at the end of that conversation you knew they were going to say, voila, here's the correct answer, you probably wouldn't want to have the conversation with them.
Yeah, okay. What's your advice to parents who perhaps have dipped their toe in the water in this field before and have come away thinking, you know, I let my kids down?
If a parent has felt that they've failed before, or they weren't able to start a discussion, I think it's okay to say, well, let's give this another shot, or let's try a completely different topic, or buy the other book. So take it from another angle. But I mean, I don't think there are a lot of people who said, look, I've tried open engagement with my kids. And it's failed. I mean, it might have sputtered out a bit, but it's like, dare I say it, as an old person, you buy a bag of fireworks, and I remember on fireworks night, and one wouldn't go off.
Yeah.
That didn't mean my father threw out the rest of the bag. He just went, okay, well, let's light the next firework.
Oh, glorious days.
That's right, and he survived.
Yes, mostly. He did come in with singed eyebrows on occasion, I'll be
honest. Yeah, that's right.
Michael Parker, thanks so much for your conversation.
Okay, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.